Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Paul Wearson.
Well, hi, Susan. It's good to be back, and good to welcome our listeners again. It's been a couple of weeks since I've been here, and you, I know, have been covering the Science March and the People's Climate March pretty heavily during that time. And now I think today we're going to have a change of pace.
Yes, but not a change in direction. In fact, all our stories this week deal with action of some sort, whether it's something as simple as sending a bouquet to a friend or conserving thousands of acres for public use. May is literally a time to stop and smell the roses, although I guess the roses are a little better in June. But there are lots of wildflowers, as you will hear from our guests. And
give us a quick rundown so our listeners will know that they need to stay tuned.
First, we'll hear about the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation, then about a bipartisan group called Citizens Climate Lobby. After that, we'll turn to fun with a May Day celebration in a flower shop that's been operating for 95 years. And for the weekend, we have two big outdoor festivals, one in Story County and one in Boone.
And we'll also be reminding people that our fun drive is still on. We're getting close to matching that $15,000 challenge grant.
Don't forget, we are also looking for 25 new members. So if you've been listening for a while and thinking about joining, now is the time to call 515-292-2878 or go to khioifm.org and press the yellow donate button.
Well, that being said, let's get outdoors with our first guest, Joe Jajak, Communications Director for the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation. Hello, Joe.
Good morning, Paul and Susan. Thanks for having me.
That's just a great name. It sounds like you went to Hollywood and they gave you that name to be on a marquee. Joe Jajak. I love it. And you are Communications Director for the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation. And today, all your folks will know that you are communicating. Welcome to our program.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, tell us about the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation.
Sure. Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation is a statewide, private, nonprofit conservation group. Our mission is to protect and restore Iowa's land, water, and wildlife. And we do that in a lot of different ways. We work with private landowners that want to do conservation and protection on their own land. And we also work with a lot of public agencies to help expand parks and wildlife areas and help build bike trails. And we're a membership-supported organization. We have about 7,000 members all around Iowa. But what I like to say is we speak for our members, but we also speak for the voiceless, the land, water, wildlife, and future generations that really depend on conservation action in Iowa.
Well, that's quite a mission, and not to be underestimated. Now, when did the organization begin, Joe?
Yeah, it was founded in 1979 by a group of really forward-looking people that included Governor Robert Ray at the time. And the initial mission of the organization, the foundation, was to help public agencies like county conservation boards and the Iowa DNR that were looking to do land protection and to expand parks at the time. And it was really hard for public agencies to be able to buy land when it went up for sale just because of the bureaucracy. And so what we were initially established to do was to be kind of a holder, so we could step in and buy land and public agencies could figure out a funding plan and we can do private fundraising for them and help them expand public lands. And that's still a big part of our mission today.
Well, that's great. Now, since 1979, you might let our audience know about some of your achievements that has happened during that period of time with the organization.
Sure, sure. Well, we've worked on about 1,100 different projects. We've protected over 150,000 acres all across Iowa. We've worked in 96 of 99 counties in Iowa, so we're all over the state. And we have, in the mid-80s, we started helping with bike trails, especially rails-to-trails projects. So abandoned rail lines, we help turn them into multi-use trails, and we've worked on over 60% of those trails that exist in Iowa today.
Wow, that's quite an achievement. Now, generally, who do you work with to expand the lands you protect? When you see a piece of land or see something that you see fitting into your goals, what's the process? Who do you talk with and who do you incorporate into your efforts?
It depends on the project, but a lot of times private landowners will come to us and say that they're interested in this becoming public land, and so they'll work directly with us to sell or to donate the land. Sometimes the public agencies, like a county conservation board, we recently had a couple exciting projects in Story County, and the county conservation board came to us and said that there's a couple properties going up for sale that we think are really valuable and could be a great piece in the Story County Conservation Board system, and so we helped them purchase them. They included some generous bargain sale donations, so they donated land value from the landowners there. And then we worked, or we're still working with Story County to do some private fundraising, and so that we can transfer those fully to Story County and have them be new public areas.
Oh, that's fantastic. So these are lands that formerly were under cultivation or probably a marginal cropland that's being incorporated into something more useful, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, you know, we're not interested in prime farmland for the most part, because we're really interested in land that has conservation value, wetlands, woodlands, prairies, and sometimes that's farmland that really shouldn't be farmed. And so it's land that's coming out of production and going back into conservation, things that are really going to help water quality. One of these projects in Story County, where it's along the Skunk River, and we're going to be restoring a few oxbows that had historically existed there, and they'd been under production for a while, but were generally generally wet, and so it wasn't really great farmland, and we're going to restore that back to some of what it was historically. It's on the Jordan family wildlife area.
Yeah, and there's another one that I know that you were involved with several years ago, and I don't know who has jurisdiction over that now, and that's Munn Woods.
Yeah, I think that's the city of Ames.
The city of Ames, and I would like to put in a little plug for these areas, because just going to your website and looking at others and thinking about these particular ones I know of in Story County, commonly known that something like 99% of Iowa is under cultivation, huge percentage anyhow. And so you think, well, there's nothing left. And then you go on your website and you see all the different kinds of terrain that are being preserved, you know,
Right. Streams
and woods. And of course, the Munn Woods, I think most of the people, at least in Ames, are familiar with this. This is right in the middle of town. It's just a wooded area that was sort of in everybody's backyards in a certain part of town. It was privately owned, and it couldn't be developed for houses, I don't think, but it would have been such a shame to lose that. And I know that the Munn family, you know, whose children had played there with the other children from the neighborhood, wanted to leave that as a place that was always there.
That's right. You know, these little parks or little pieces of land can be just as important as protecting a 1,000-acre prairie, you know, if it's in the right spot, and especially these places in town or near town where there's some development pressure, it can be really important and really change what a community looks like for the future, too. So we look at those as really important projects as well.
Now, you have some goals here, Joe, that I'm reading from some of your materials, a strategic plan covering the years 2015 to 2019, and you might talk a little bit about some of your, this is sort of an overview of what you hope to accomplish in that time.
Right. And our strategic plan, we have a few different areas that we want to cover. And we look at it in these kind of protection areas. We want to protect as much land as we can. We want to help steward that, whether it's land that we own or land that other people own. We really want to help people connect with nature, and then we want to strengthen our foundation and thereby our mission as much as possible. But we do have some pretty concrete goals in there, too, and that includes protecting 5,000 to 8,000 acres every year and bringing our total up to 175,000 acres protected over 40 years. So we're coming up on that in the next couple of years, our 40-year anniversary. And, you know, these, we kind of take projects as they come. You know, they come in from private landowners or public agencies, but these goals really help us, you know, make sure that we're doing as much work as possible. And I think that setting these goals and having our members and the public see them really help them connect with our mission and realize how important it is to do this work.
And your job is to get the word out. So some folks are contacting you when they initiate the contact because they want to be involved. Is that right, Joe?
That's right, yeah. I'm a great first place to start. We have, as I said, about 7,000 members all around Iowa. We're a member-supported organization. And we have a few member benefits. We do a quarterly magazine for our members, and they get a calendar every year and have the ability to come to some special member-oriented events, and they're invited to all our volunteer events. And it's really a great community to be a part of. You really get to know people that are in your community but all across the state that are like-minded and share similar goals as you.
Well, you know, you might give the folks here an opportunity to know about your website. I'm sure you have a website, right, Joe?
We do. It's at www.inhf.org, and we have some great information there about how we work and where we work. Also a great list of events we have coming up, including volunteer events, and how you can learn more about membership or and some other resources as well. We do a little public policy work, too. We advocate for conservation as much as possible, and there's information in a lot of different ways you can get involved with the foundation.
No, that's terrific. Is there a phone number they can call also, Joe?
Yeah. We're based out of Des Moines. Our phone number there at the office is 515-288-1846, and people are welcome to call with any questions they have. We also have a small satellite office up in Decorah. I know it's a little out of the listening area.
I went to school at Luther College, and let me tell you, that is a beautiful part of the state where the glacier didn't come through, and we have high limestone cliffs and a great upper Iowa River to canoe on, and all kinds of the people in Winnesee County are really motivated to be conservationists. It's very, very strongly endorsed up there, and it just lends itself to this project and this kind of thinking a lot more than these flatlands that are all cultivated and squared off in sections, you know. So when I went up there to school, I was really aware that people value the land, the trout streams, all the beautiful surroundings and the scenic valleys up there. And I just didn't think that I was in Iowa anymore when I went to Decorah.
It definitely feels different, and it's a special area up there, and I think people realize that and want to protect it. We actually have an event this weekend. It's becoming an annual event, and it's called Into the Wild and Out with the Mustard.
Now, that's a curious name, Into the Wild and Out with the Mustard. You might explain that, Joe.
yeah. Well, we own a 1,000-acre preserve up there called Heritage Valley. It's about 20 minutes from Decorah, and it's we have this annual volunteer event, and people come out and help us pull the invasive species garlic mustard. It's really, especially in northeast Iowa, it's become prevalent, but it's starting to spread all over the state, but it can really deteriorate high-quality woodlands because it shades out a lot of the other natural species, and especially the spring wildflowers, which can be disappointing. So we have a lot of volunteers come out. It really has to be hand-pulled is the only way to do it. So it's a community effort to eradicate it in places around Decorah and at places like Heritage Valley where we have this event.
I picture this motivated workforce just like bees going through a a big swath of land or something. It's quite a mental image when you think about all the handwork involved.
You know, we have it here in Story County, and I can testify, having been part of one of those crews a few years ago, that it's happening here, and the Story County Conservation I think had people out already, although they're not talking about that today. They have a festival to talk about later. But I know that's on their to-do list.
Well, now, Joe, conservation in Iowa or anywhere wouldn't be possible without funding and state support provided by government agencies and legislatures. Now, are there challenges in that area for you to have that kind of support?
Always. There are always challenges there. And I will note that we're a privately funded organization, so we don't receive any direct public funding. But a lot of our partners depend on public funding. We work a lot with county conservation boards and the DNR and cities, and they receive a lot of public funding. So with our mission, you know, we make it a priority to try to make conservation a priority in the legislature and in our state budget. And it was really kind of disappointing this year. I know it was a tough budget year all around, and a lot of places received cuts, but conservation really received some disproportionate cuts, and there were some programs that were very adversely affected or dismantled completely, and it was disappointing to see. So there's really a lot of work to do to talk with our legislators and make them understand that.
Well, I think
conservation should be a priority in Iowa.
Well, yes, one of the things that is always a challenge with conservation is that it's so focused on the future and so tempting to ignore things for the convenience of the present. And I wondered if you were involved also in encouraging farmers to alter some of their farming practices, like cover crops and that sort of thing. Do you get involved with that at all?
We do. We work with a lot of private landowners that want to do conservation on their land, and in most of those cases, it involves some kind of agriculture. So we hold a lot of conservation easements, which are agreements with private landowners that put some permanent protection on the land. So it's an agreement that stays with the land for the current owner and all future owners. And INHF holds those agreements and has to monitor them every year. But a lot of these conservation easements include agriculture, and they'll set up some sustainable farming practices on there that they would like to see. And so we do work with quite a few farmers to put in these practices, riparian buffers and cover crops and you know, anything that they can do. It really makes a big difference in water quality, both locally and around the state.
And a lot of the things we talk about with regard to conservation is inculcating a need and a desire from young people to be involved in conservation. Are you involved with school programs or things that encourage teachers and staff to be involved in motivating their students to do conservation things? Like that project you spoke of in Decorah, I hope there are some teenagers on that crew.
We do. We do get a good number of young people out at all our volunteer events and events like this, and we encourage school groups to bring kids out. We do a lot of private events with scout troops and things like that. We don't do a lot of on-the-ground education. We think that the DNR and County Conservation Boards, you know, they have really talented naturalists and really great education programs, and they do a good job with that. But we do have a lot of young people that come to our events, our volunteer events, especially ones along bike trails. We see that young people are really attracted to those, and they're accessible for a lot of people. But that's a big part of our mission, is getting young people interested. And one of the big ways we do that is through our internship program. Every year we have between 20 and 25 interns. In the summer we have a big land stewardship intern crew, and that's why we have so many. But we also have some that work in the office.
That's great.
And we're really trying to create future conservationists, so it's people that come from all different backgrounds, but they learn about Iowa and about why conservation is so important here. And it's impressive the places that some of these former interns are now. Some of them are state legislators. Some of them are directors of county conservation boards. And it's really great to have that connection with them when they're young.
Well, it sounds like it's all about the future, Joe. And we've been talking with Joe. Thank you, Joe, for being on our show today. And we've been talking with Joe Jajak, Communications Director for the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation.
Thank you so much, Paul and Susan.
Yeah.
This is an example of the way citizens can protect the land through public-private reclamation. You can find lands to enjoy near you, and if you don't know where they are, try the website at Iowa, NHF. That would be the acronym for Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation.org. You'll find trails, parks, and woodlands in every county and lots of beautiful pictures. And if you go to your county recreation center, you'll find a wide variety of local activities.
Well, you know, Susan, one of the things that impressed me about what Joe had to say was just how many people were working together to make the most of the land that isn't under cultivation in Iowa, and what a variety of landscapes these represent. There's a lot of people there's a lot that people can accomplish when they get together with an idea like that.
Our next part of the program is about one such organization. Leading up to last week's climate march, I interviewed a Des Moines lawyer named Channing Dutton about an organization that has an unusual idea for creating bipartisan support for legislation to address climate change. Let's hear what he has to say.
Citizens Climate Lobby, in the broad sense, is a political action group where we are, as a national effort, we are trying to create the willpower in the Congress to invoke what's called the carbon fee and dividend plan, where essentially we charge a fee for the extraction of carbon, whether it's oil, whether it's coal, whether it's natural gas. When the carbon is extracted from its natural state, a fee is assessed. Some people will call that fee a tax, but it's not really what this group is about. They're more appropriately called a fee. But the idea is it recognizes that there is a intrinsic cost in taking something like oil and then burning it in engines and injecting CO2 into the atmosphere. So by charging this fee, we would create a fund of money that would then be paid out to the public in a form of a dividend one or more times a year. And the dividend would be available to each citizen of the country to spend as that person deems fit. Under this plan, there would be no growth of government. The money would all be distributed to citizens. And so, for example, in a family of five, the adults would each receive one share, and then each child under the age of 18 would receive half a share. And then the purpose of that dividend is to allow people to make other choices with the rebate money or the dividend money. And the role of government becomes to help people with incentives or programs where they might want to spend their dividend money for a cleaner or a greener future. And in a broad sense, that's what that group does. Now, what our local group does is we meet regularly with politicians at all levels. We try to engage candidates from dog catcher on up. And we've had some success in this regard, where we talk to candidates about climate change, and we talk about the unfolding catastrophe that's settling upon us right now. We're seeing, you know, clear signs of it, even here in central Iowa. And we ask these people, as they are entering the political season, to speak about climate change, to put it in their stump speech, to put it on their websites. And we encourage them by making it clear that voters like us care. And then the other thing we do is we engage the media, much like you and I are doing here today. And we say to the media, there is a story that is being grossly underreported. And that story is the climate catastrophe. We're doing too much reporting of events and not enough of the why behind those events. And so our group meets with individual reporters. We meet with editorial boards. We meet when we seek out even the national media when they come to Des Moines, for example, during the caucus season. And we are getting ready to embark on further education for reporters and the media to better identify the climate story in the news and to connect the dot for the listeners or for the viewers. And then just this past week, some of the members of our group had a meeting with our congressman, David Young, and it was a productive meeting. You know, David Young is a congressman who says that he believes that human beings are contributing to climate change, and he believes in science-based evidence and science-based solutions, but he hasn't quite taken that big step, you know, the step across the river towards action. And so we meet with him, and he's a very courteous man, and we continue to ask him to do more and to take more steps. But what we do is we try to say we are ordinary people, and we engage in polite discourse, but we ask these candidates and the media to do a better job in terms of reporting and to do a better job in terms of legislation. So in a nutshell, that's what we do.
Is this your idea?
Citizens Climate Lobby has, I think, 2,000 affiliated groups around the world, but the vast majority of those are in the United States. So what Citizens Climate Lobby does as a national group is they really focus on this term fee and dividend, you know, the trying to rally support with existing members of Congress. But our group is independent enough and independent thinking enough that we have seen that there is a benefit to helping potential candidates understand the words climate change are nothing to run from, they're nothing to be afraid of. Global warming are terms that are on the lips of everybody who is paying attention to what's going on in the soil or in the plant life or in the wildlife. And by pushing or nudging candidates and the media towards a more frank discussion about this, sooner rather than later, get the country to the point where we can accomplish a greater good for the what I call the climate future.
You call yourself Citizens Climate Lobby. You have a lobbying strategy with Congress that I don't think you've explained yet.
You know, maybe the best description of the lobbying strategy is one of the things we do, and that's what we did this past Monday with David Young, is we try to arrange sit-down with members of Congress, and we do this as a national group twice a year, a main big push in June, and then a companion push in November. But the idea is to convene and to meet en masse with each member of Congress and with the senators. The perfect scenario is maybe three, maybe four, maybe five or more people from a particular district or particular state arranges an interview and or an appointment with the member of Congress, and then we sit down and talk about why the fee and dividend plan is sound. So we try to go one-on-one, and Citizens Climate Lobby is very extensively supported by research and by national authors, national speakers. And so we bring this information repeatedly to the halls of Congress to say, we are still here, we're still asking for action. And there has been some progress in the Congress. Maybe the best illustration of that is something called the Climate Caucus that now has 34 members. And in the number of members of House, that is not substantial, but it is clear movement, and the number is growing larger with each passing month. And so, for example, in our meeting with Congressman Young, we asked him to join the Climate Caucus in the U.S. Congress. He and Congressman Loebsack would be two great additions to that group, because as people take these steps, as they cross these rivers, it becomes easier and easier to have an adult conversation about climate action. And we think when we get to that adult conversation, The concept of the carbon fee and the dividend to citizens will be a very powerful force that sooner or later is going to be adopted.
Well, you mentioned Young and Lobsack. Now, it's my understanding that the Climate Caucus in Congress is, by policy, half Republicans and half Democrats. So you can't get a new Democrat unless you have a new Republican. Is that right?
You're exactly right. So right now, Congressman Lobsack is not a member. We project that he would be if he gets the appropriate Republican counterpart. And, you know, Congressman Young would be a great counterpart with Congressman Lobsack. And we're not that far from having Midwest congressmen move forward, because over in the 2nd District in Nebraska, Congressman Don Bacon, out of Papillion, he has joined the Climate Caucus. So there's a Nebraska Republican already a member, and I can't remember who the Democrat was who joined with him at the same time, but this is a neighboring congressional district to Congressman Young. So it is, it's intriguing, and Congressman Young told us that he would reach out to Congressman Bacon and you know, learn more about, well, what was the thought process, what was the calculus that led him, Congressman Bacon, to take that next step across the river.
This is KHOI Community Radio, Story City, Ames, and the surrounding area. I'm one of your hosts today, together with my co-host, Paul Wearson. We've been listening to Channing Dutton talking about Citizens Climate Lobby, but he didn't tell us how to get in touch with them.
Well, there's an active group in Des Moines, and they will hold their next meeting on Saturday, May 13th at 11 a.m. at the Northside Library. You can learn more about the national group at citizensclimatelobby.org. And the local groups, they have a Facebook page called CCL Des Moines, CCL Des Moines. As usual, you can find these links on our homepage by clicking Read More under today's program. Now, we've had a lot of heavy subjects today. Let's talk about something fun.
The next segment is the May Day celebration and ribbon cutting for the oldest flower shop in Ames, Everett's, which first opened its doors in 1922. I went to see it and to talk with owner Brian Smith. Let's listen in.
I'm Brian Smith from Everett's Flowers.
And how long have you been the owner of Everett's Flowers?
I've been the owner for 22 years now.
And did you work here before you were the owner?
I worked here previously for 12 years.
Well, this anniversary, 95 years for Everett's Flowers, makes me think about how the flower shop has changed in 95 years. When I was talking to people, they said, well, where did they get their flowers 95 years ago? So do you know?
Probably the beginning, I would think they would be like more from like local growers and maybe local farmers around. Still, some of them, I think, would come from some wholesalers that they would have around also. But I think a lot more local things.
And what was most of their business?
At that time, I think most of it was wedding and funeral. We bring them into the world, and we take them out of the world, and every occasion and event in between. And so I think, you know, we've become part of people's families. They've become part of our family. And I think that's one of the biggest rewards is, you know, seeing these people come and go into our lives and how it's changed our lives, how it's changed our community. And I think that's the big thing is to, you know, we want to help each other.
A flower shop has a sort of a unique position in a community, and that's why Everett's being 95 is significant. There are certainly other places you can buy flowers, mm-hmm. and other places you can buy nice flowers, but that relationship that you mentioned is something that you can't get any place except a local flower shop.
Right. That's what we work on is the customer service. And when you start with their wedding, maybe, or a graduation, or a funeral, maybe, you know, with a family, and they've enjoyed that. And I've had so many notes from people after funerals and say, you caught the essence of what my mother was like, or you caught the feeling that I was trying to portray. And, you know, and that's that to me is just a special thing to me, and that's my reward. You know, every time I do something like that, you have to set yourself apart. And I know that there's all these other options out there, and that's why we've changed the way that we have too, is to entice people to come in and enjoy. You know, we'll have people in here for hours at a time, just enjoying things. And that means a lot, too, whether they buy anything or not. But maybe they'll come back another time, you know, too. So it's part of the business, but it's also just part of, I mean, goodwill to people.
Well, there's another part of your business that I was reminded of when I went online. And I saw a series of bouquets. And you are part of the network that can deliver flowers all over the country. As I think about it, I don't believe that's true for many of the other flower sellers.
Actually, there's the big, large wire services, and actually we have now dropped all of those wire services. And that was just something recently we've done, just because with the different type of technology that we have, more and more people are going online and looking up things on their own. And it's so much easier than in the past. So we kind of dropped the middleman out of there. So now we can relate directly with the other florist versus going through a middleman that they would go through. So I feel like we can help the people and save a little money for both people in that aspect also. But a lot of places don't offer that service at all.
So when I see those bouquets on your website, you can order those directly from some other florist. Is that right?
Now, the ones you see on our website, most of those bouquets, or a lot of them anyway, are ones that we've actually done ourselves. And we take pictures of them, so then that you're seeing what ours. But we've also had there's some stock photos that we've also used too.
But so these are bouquets that we would buy here and use here, not something that we could give to a relative who was in a hospital in New Jersey. Yeah.
Most of the time, if you saw a picture that you liked, we could portray that to somebody in New Jersey to say this is what was in it, or they could go on our site even and actually and see the picture of it. And a lot of times what we tell people too are these are suggestions, because not everybody's going to be able to carry every single type of flower.
Well, but this is another change, big change. When did that change take place?
I think we dropped the wire services, I think it's been a couple years now that we've done that. And it was a big kind of a risk for us, but we were paying thousands of dollars every month just to the wire services. And so just by stopping that alone, we've had to change how I've ordered flowers, because I don't have all those orders coming in from other shops. But the thing was, is when I got those orders in, the middleman would get 20-30% of that. That's my profit. I'm trying to work smarter, not harder.
Well, we've been talking with Brian Smith about what a flower shop can mean to a community year-round. And now it's time to go outside. And Susan, you found two big celebrations coming up next weekend, this coming weekend. One in Story County, one in Boone County.
The Spring Festival at the Story County Conservation Center in McFarland Park will take place this Sunday, May 7th, from 2 to 5 p.m. Here's Erica Place to tell us about it.
My name is Erica Place, and I'm the Outreach Coordinator for Story County Conservation. And it is going to be a garden party this Sunday at McFarland Park. We're having our Partners Spring Festival. We hold a festival twice a year out here at McFarland Park. The one in spring runs from 2 to 5 p.m., and there's a whole host of activities going on. It's supposed to be beautiful weather, so you can catch live music by the Britches and Hoes Ukulele Club. They'll be playing throughout the duration of the festival. We'll be unveiling a new Discovery Nature playscape that was recently built at McFarland Park. It's a natural playscape, so logs to climb on, places to dig in the mud, lots of fun for kids. We're also going to be rededicating the Touch of Life Trail, the paved trail that goes around McFarland Lake. The Amestown and Country Kiwanis members have long partnered with us on paving that trail and maintaining that trail, so it's the whole stretch is finally paved, so we're celebrating that. There will be a native plant sale by a department with Iowa State University, so you can jumpstart your garden with plants that are native to Iowa and good for pollinators. There will be tons of crafts and other activities, including fishing. There will be fishing poles available for checkout and canoeing. You can borrow a canoe and head out on the lake. So lots of ways to enjoy this Sunday. And snacks, cookies to top it all off.
Are there wildflowers in bloom now?
There sure are. And actually, we plan to put out some stakes along the Touch of Life Trail and throughout the park so you can read the signs and see what species are blooming. Hepatica, trout, lilies, Dutchman's breeches. The woodlands are beautiful right now, so it's a great reason to get out on a walk around the lake.
For those who might not know where McFarland Park is, in the first place, this is the Story County Conservation Center.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
And how do you get out here?
Well, you want to take Dayton North, or I-35 North. We're just northeast of Ames. Take Dayton North as far as you can go. Just take a right at the T, and that'll take you straight to it. It's a dead-end road. Otherwise, it's exit 116 from I-35.
And what time?
It starts at 2, and it runs all the way till 5. It's a come-and-go-as-you-please type of event. But if you do want to catch the unveiling of the Nature Playscape and the rededication of the Touch of Life Trail, you'll want to be here right at the beginning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, that was Erica Place telling us about the Spring Festival at Story County Conservation Center. That's on Sunday, May 7th. But we have something bigger, I believe, across the county line in Boone. And we have James Gideon here in the studio to tell us about it. Welcome, James.
Good morning.
And I want to tell you that James is wearing this great sort of cap that really talks about his personality. It's really unique, and I bet you wear that to bed. It's just you, isn't it?
My wife would tell you yes.
And her and her kerchief and my cap, et cetera, et cetera. Well, now, it's this is coming up this weekend, the Boone River Valley Festival, and it's organized by the newly formed Boone Action Association. You might tell us about, first of all, the Boone Action Association.
Well, the Boone Action Association is a group of people that wanted to do something with the county. You know, Puffer Billy Days is pretty well known as far as Boone town itself, which is done by the chamber. And we wanted to get people in to see not just what the town of Boone with the train has to do, but the whole county and what the natural resources that we have over there.
And so this is part of that, and it's the Boone River Valley Festival.
Yep.
And, you know, when I look at all the events, well, we'll talk about those in detail, but one thing that really impresses me, you've got a band, the Three Dog Night.
Yeah, isn't that great?
Well, they were the big group in, what, the 70s?
Hey, no.
These are the guys. this is the group.
Right,
and
right.
They're playing in Boone. When will the concert be during this weekend?
That'll be on Saturday night. The opening act will be Bad Authority. We tried to go local, try to keep everything Iowa as much as we could, and we have Bad Authority from Carroll coming to open for them, and then they'll be playing at 7 o'clock. Bad Authority will be playing at 5. And then Three Dog Night will be playing at 7.
And the Three Dog Night goes on to Las Vegas to perform in large venues.
Yep.
Now, how many people know what the origin of that term is? Three Dog Night?
Yep, that was an Australian deal.
Yeah. Yep. Well, the way I heard it goes back to when knighthood was in flower and people lived in drafty castles, right, and they slept with their dogs. If it was a real cold night, they called it a Three Dog Night.
Boy, you checked on the history, didn't
you? Yes, well, I'm very well read, James. So how did things get kicked off on the River Valley?
Well, this group actually formed in June, just a group of people sitting together talking about wanting to do something, and then about July, they started getting to it, and then they kept hounding me, and finally in August, I joined up, and then we just kind of bloomed. It started out with just art in the park, and then just bloomed into being a whole three-day weekend instead of just a Sunday.
So this began in August, and already you're conducting this big event.
Either go big or go home.
There's nothing in between for James and the gang. How many people are involved in this organization?
There's 7 of us. Started out with about 4 of them, and then I joined on. And then a couple volunteers have joined on, but there's a 5 board members. So.
And they put this whole thing together. And you might take, well, when do festivities start?
Well, actually, they start at 7 o'clock Friday morning with Legal Limits doing a all-you-can-eat breakfast with our all-you-can-eat sausage biscuits gravy. And that's where the mud bums, the people who want to do the ditty pole fishing for out on the Boone River can sign up and sign waivers and stuff.
What is ditty pole fishing?
Well, you know what noodling is? It's where you stick your arm in. Well, ditty pole is kind of like alligator fishing, where you stick a pole into the bank and hang a string over.
Boone is an exotic place. Wow. And then what's going on after that? The biggies on Friday.
There's a run fun walk that the YMCA is putting on. It's a 1 mile for kids, family, so you can run, walk. Yeah. I'd be wheelchairing. Mm-hmm. And then Boone Valley Brewery will be doing a kickoff party. We'll be closing the street off and having a street dance with live music there. It doesn't cost you anything for that.
And we'll have craft beers with that.
Beers there. Mm-hmm. We'll have some food vendors there, so don't come already full. Come and eat some food and drink some brewed beer and have a good time. That's a kickoff party. Okay.
And so that's Friday night. That's going into the festival.
Correct.
And then what time do things get underway on Saturday?
Oh, goodness.
Early in the morning?
I believe the first event, I believe, is at 9 or 10. I'm basically focused on the concert, trying to get it all organized. You know, you have to divide yourselves. So I believe the other events start about 9 or 10 in the morning. We have library that's going to be doing some readings. The Boone County Conservation is putting on some classes. There's like 10 different classes. They're only like 20-minute segments, so you can look up the subject that you're interested in and go to that one, particular one, or you can go to all of them. If it was me, I'd go to all of them. I'm all about nature all as much as I can.
And there are guided tours of the Ledges State Park. Right?
Yes. We had, believe it or not, we had 3,000 people signed that were interested in wanting to go to that.
Is that right?
Yes, and it was pretty amazing. So next year we're going to have to look at maybe trying to expand and get more guides to do that, but we only have room for about 150 people. So it's like, wow.
Response? Why, you got to be very happy with that, James.
Oh, yes, yes.
Why, that's terrific. And I love the Ledges. That's one of my great places. Now, they had a washout, didn't they? They're doing some repair to
right,
the road.
Right, right.
Now, that's not going to impair the tour at all. People can go in there.
Now, you know, the Ledges State Park was the first set-aside ground to become a state park in Iowa, even though Strawberry Point was the first to be designated. But Ledges was actually the first set-aside ground.
Well, that's why I get up so early in the morning to learn something. I did not know that this morning when I woke up. Thanks, James.
You bet.
So it goes way, way back. And then you have that concert. That's just the Three Dog Night. Just to remind you, some of their hits, Joy to the World. Just terrific. Mama Told Me No Come.
Shambhala. One is the loneliest number.
I just can't stress enough that there's a big-time rock band coming to Boone this weekend.
Yeah.
And that has to be one of your headlines for the whole festival. It's just fun, fun, fun. Woo.
Yeah, I want to get on stage and do the drums, but they won't let me.
Oh, well, you never know. There's a lot of craft beer served. They might be very receptive to James and your debut on the drums with a national group.
Oh, yeah.
Now, a portion of the concert proceeds are going to go to the Boone County Freedom Flight.
Yes.
And to refresh the memory of everyone out there, that's the wonderful flights that go to Washington, D.C. for the veterans to tour all the monuments. And Story County has been very big with that.
Right.
And that's happening in Boone County, too.
Right.
And so that's really great that money is going to finance that flight.
It's this thing is a whole, the BAA is a nonprofit. And so every year when we do this festival, we're going to be looking for some nonprofit that we can contribute to.
So when you got started, did you solicit funds from merchants and people back there when August dawned and you folks got together?
We being slow and not, it took a while, and then we finally figured, we need to get some sponsors.
Money.
Yes, we got some sponsors, and the community of Boone has been great as far as, you're doing this, you're bringing this back, you're bringing Three Dog Night? Oh, well, hey, I want to participate. I want to donate to you and help you get going. So the community has been fantastic.
So you had some money right from the start. And I think that I just can't say enough about the visioning process here. Who got Three Dog Night? Well, how did you do that?
So we did a poll on Facebook and listed like four or five different ones. And so we went with the ones that people in the community wanted to see.
Wow.
And that's how we went. So.
And you just got the people that they wanted to see.
Well, yeah.
You sound like a big-time agent, James.
No, we have an agent that helped us. He gave us a list of ones that were available, and so then we posted it out there, and then we'd get it.
That is wonderful. Now, what time is that concert so everyone knows when they can listen and watch Bay Dog Night?
It's at the Boone County Fairgrounds. Mm-hmm. Everybody asked that, so I got to tell that, Boone County Fairgrounds. Doors open at 4 o'clock. Bad Authority starts playing at 5 o'clock for about an hour. Then there'll be an intermission with the Mud Bums emceeing, and that's when we'll announce the winners of the Catfish Tournament. And then at 7 o'clock, the Three Dog Night will start, and they'll play till 9:30.
Three Dog Night coming to Boone.
And I'll tell you, there's going to be food and brewed beer out there and beer. So, hey, come and have a grand old time, and I want to see some people dancing. And this is a family event. I want people to understand this is for families. Mm-hmm. That's what this whole thing is about, is for families. So bring your kids. They can have a good time, too.
So no, there's not going to be a mosh pit where everyone's loaded and all that sort of thing.
I hope not. No. They'd probably throw me. They wouldn't pass me on. They'd throw me.
A family event, the Three Dog Night. This is wonderful. It's such a revelation to me. That's just terrific because you don't see those major rock bands playing in small-town Iowa. And, you know, I'm so impressed with Boone. You've got the Boone and Scenic Valley Railway, Pufferbilly Days, and now a third major event during the year. And it's just great that the community turns out to not only volunteer but attend and support all three events and all three functions, you know.
And you got to keep in mind that we also have not just the summer stuff. We have a ski hill, too. You can go the Seven Oaks. You can go out there and ski during the winter. Mm. You can tube and canoe during the summer from out there. Don Williams, they got a lake out there that you can camp. They got golf course. There's lots of things in Boone County.
And they've got Kate Shelley.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Well, they have the history of her.
Kate will not be there on the weekend. We'll clarify that.
I'll dress up like her if that's what will get people to come.
I'd be willing to pay to see that, James. Now, on Sunday, what happens? The festival continues on Sunday.
Sunday is another fun day. It's from 10 to 4. It's like I said, this is how the whole thing started out with, is Art in the Park. It used to be part of Pufferbilly Days and kind of got dropped. And people in the community were like, oh, bummed out about it.
We want Art in the Park back.
Yes. And yeah. So that's what started this whole thing. And now we're bringing it back. We have over 30 vendors. The National Guard will be there with a catapult. And they'll be setting targets out for kids to be able to catapult and try to hit targets. There's just tons and tons of activities. Between Man Cove, where there'll be things for the guys. There'll be, of course, lady things, you know, and arts and crafts. So.
And how about Xanadu Junior and the Boone Community Theater? Is that right?
You got? I believe so. Yes.
Well, somebody told me that they're going to have kids doing things around the fair.
Right. There's all kinds of things for the kids. There's going to be face painters. I mean, just tons of things for kids. And that's, like I said, it's a family thing. So we wanted to have everything from the dads, from Man Cove, to the wives and to the kids. And so we also have Iowa Rock and Roll Hall of Fame has three volunteers that are coming to sing during that time. So from noon to 4, you could come and listen to live music while you're walking around the Art in the Park.
Well, this sounds wonderful. And James, I'm very impressed you got the Three Dog Night. And that's only the tip of the iceberg.
You got your ticket?
I've got to work on it. Is there a ticket? I got to buy a ticket.
How do you buy tickets?
You can buy tickets.
You can either go to our Facebook page, which is Boone River Valley Festival, or you can go to the website, which is www.BooneRiverValleyFestival.com, and you can go to schedule tickets there, and you go through the schedule there, and you'll see where you can click on tickets and you purchase tickets.
Just fantastic. James Gideon, who is here on behalf of the Boone River Valley Festival, coming up May 5th, 6th, 7th.
Yep.
And that'll be right away in Boone, Iowa. Thanks very much, James
Gideon.
Thanks
for having us.
What an event.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. We've been your hosts today, Susan Franzen and Paul Wearson. We spoke with Joe Jajak from the National Heritage Foundation, Channing Dutton from the Citizens Climate Lobby, Brian Smith from Everett's Flowers, Erica Place from the Story County Conservation Center, and James Gideon of the Boone Action Association.
Now, Local Talk will be rebroadcast at noon and 7 p.m., and you can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. And there you will also find all the information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories. That's khoifm.org. And you can like us on Facebook, too, and get updates on all of our show postings on your news feed.
Local Talk was engineered by Rebecca Reuter. Our theme song is backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
And Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. And if you'd like to join the team as a reporter, contact us here at KHOI at 292-2878, 515-292-2878. Or you can contact us through our website, khoifm.org. That's also where you need to go to contact us if you decide to become a member or renew your membership today. Just look for the yellow donate button when you get to the website.
If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening and
see you again on the radio.
KHOI is funded in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. Find job opportunities throughout Ames and Story County at workinames.com. Again, that's workinames.com.